Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Love Strategy. I'm Nina Atwood, and my purpose is to take you on an inspiring journey of self-discovery and relationship recovery. I'm the host of the show, but this is really all about you, and it's for you, the single woman who wants to date smart and find the love of her life. On this show, casual sex is dumb, being choosy is smart, and the prize is a great marriage for life. So please listen, call in, and share your dating and relationship stories. Ask the questions that keep you awake at night and get coaching. The number to call in is 347-308-8511. That's 347-308-8511. Now, stay tuned for Love Strategy.
You're listening to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, your host, live this time. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome to the show. If you've listened to us before, welcome back. Tonight we're going to cover several topics that are highly personal and relevant to dating and relationships. First of all, we're going to talk about the three keys to winning back the one who left. So if you're a guy left and you're puzzled or bewildered about why, and you're hoping that he will come back, we're going to cover the top strategies for maximizing the odds of a good reunion and to maximize the future success of this relationship. So that's going to be our main topic tonight, but we're also going to talk about cyber stalking through social media. You may be more at risk than you realized through some very new applications or apps that people are downloading into their smartphones, and you'll need to know what those are, what to do to avoid the dangers to yourself, and how to protect yourself. We're also going to talk about communication and health. Did you know that what you say and how much you express yourself when you argue with your man or significant other has something to do with your health? Whether or not you speak your mind or bottle things up really does impact you. And we're going to talk about that. What is the impact on you, not just emotionally, but physically, depending on your communication style, the style that you use when you are having a disagreement, let's say, with the one that you love. So we're going to cover all those things tonight. And as usual, if you're listening and you have a specific question that you want to ask, be sure and call in and we'll take your call and give you some coaching and advice right here on the air. So did you know that the newest trend in social networking is called geolocative social networking? You ever heard of that word before? Geolocative. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's kind of a new word. But basically, it's apps that you download into your smartphone that are designed to locate you or pinpoint where you are in physical space. You know, where, what is your, if you're, obviously, if you live in a large city, it's going to give a street location, and it's going to tell others who are your friends on that network where you are. Now, the big one that's catching on is called Foursquare. That's the name of the app. And Foursquare uses your smartphone's global positioning system, or what we call GPS system, to broadcast your precise location to your friends. And you can choose how extensive the circle is that your location is broadcast to. So it may also go out to the wider world depending again on your choice. Users are encouraged to check in on their phone whenever they arrive at a point of interest. You know, so let's say that you're out shopping and you're in your favorite store, you're in a cafe somewhere, you're at a museum or a nightclub or wherever it is that you find yourself. What you would be encouraged to do is to check in on your phone so that your other fellow users know where you are. And It's a great way, supposedly, to see if any of your friends are around, and if they're close by, then you can hook up with them. You can get together with them. So that's kind of the intention of how it's used. And of course, that would be really cool if it's only shared with your closest friends and your family. But clearly, it is potentially dangerous outside of your closest circles. So I want you to listen to this. This is an article that I came across. I'm not going to tell you who wrote it right off the bat. I just want to read to you. This is a true story. All right. Louise has straight auburn hair, and judging by the only photograph I have of her, she's in her 30s. She works in recruiting. I also know which train station she uses regularly, what supermarket she shopped at last night, and where she met her friends for a meal in her hometown last week. At this moment, she's somewhere inside the bar in front of me, meeting with colleagues after work. Louise is a complete stranger. Until 10 minutes ago, when I discovered she was located within a mile of me, I didn't even know of her existence. But equipped only with a smartphone and a social networking application called Foursquare, I have located her to within just a few square miles, accessed her Twitter account, and conducted multiple cross-reference Google searches using the personal details I have already managed to accumulate about her from her online presence. And in the short time it has taken me to walk to this bar, I probably know more about her than if I'd spent an hour talking to her face-to-face. She doesn't know it yet, but Louise is about to meet her new digital stalker. All right, now fortunately, this article was written by a journalist. His name is Leo Hickman. He's actually a British journalist. He's not a real stalker, which is a good thing. Louise is a real person. But Leo, the person writing the article, thankfully is not a real stalker. But I want you to hear the next couple of paragraphs of the article. So to continue, glance down at your phone, and as I did with Louise, see the names of all the other users around you within a mile or so and exactly where they are and which fellow users they are with. I was drawn to Louise because she was in a cluster of Foursquare users, albeit still rare, even somewhere such as London, and she was the user allowing a stranger such as myself access to the most personal information, photograph, full name, Twitter feed, etc. Visit somewhere a lot, and you can even vie with others to become its virtual mayor. If you feel so inclined, you can also leave a tip or review in the digital ether. Hey, order the bacon burger. It's great. So others can benefit from your experience. Problem is privacy advocates fear that Foursquare, along with other geolocation apps such as Gowalla and Google Latitude, are vulnerable to data scraping. Namely, the sophisticated trawling and monitoring of user activity in an effort to build a rich database of personal information. Well, the big worry is who might get to make use of this information. Pick your paranoia: someone with criminal intent, a burglar, identity thief or stalker, governments, the security services, police, terrorists, the corporate, et cetera, et cetera. That's the article, again, written by British journalist Leo Hickman to alert us to the dangers of these geolocation apps. And there are geolocation apps that are specifically used for dating. One of them that I came across for the iPhone is called Scout, S-K-O-U-T. And with that geolocation app, you are basically making your location known to other invisible cyber daters out there, letting them know where you are. Someone can be watching your movements. You don't know who that person is. Finding things out about you that you don't want strangers to know. And, you know, all this stuff can be kind of fun and cute until you have a real problem in the real world. So it really pays to be very careful about this. Especially when it comes to cyber dating. Because in that world, you know, people sign up for online dating services, whether it is an iPhone app or whether it is eHarmony.com or whether it is Match.com. It doesn't matter what the venue is. People sign up for these things for all kinds of reasons, and they are not necessarily good reasons. And I know you know that because you have either had negative experiences in cyber dating or else you know people who have had them. And that is just simply because it doesn't matter what it doesn't matter whether you physically go to church or you sign up for an online dating service, there's going to be a small percentage of people who are in it for reasons other than good reasons, which is why you need to be very careful. And that is why I encourage women in particular, but men as well, to really do your due diligence. When you meet someone new, ask a lot of questions about their life. Don't be afraid to say, who is your employer? What is your work phone number? Who can you give me as a reference for you? Don't be afraid to do that when you are what I call stranger dating, which is going out with people that you've met online or in some venue where you have no context in which to know the person. If you decide to use a geolocation app, if you think that's a fun thing to do, okay, fine. But really, seriously consider only making it available, only making your information available to your closest friends and family. But even then, I want you to think twice about it, because that information can still be obtained by other people. All you have to do is click the wrong box on your preferences, and now all of a sudden people around you know who you are, know where you are, know what you are doing, know where you shop, know what your general movements are. So there was actually a website created by some, computer programmers who were worried about all of this kind of software, and they named the website PleaseRobMe.com. It's been a huge website, gotten a lot of attention, because basically their contention is that if you are telling people where you are located and they know where you live, then they know when you are not at home. So it's kind of an advertisement for someone to go and break into your house. But that's not the only reason that you want to be careful. There are lots of other reasons as well. So think about what you are putting out there in the cyber world. You might not want it out there. All right, well, moving on to the issue of your health and how you communicate. I've written and spoken about the importance of communication in relationships for years and years. Being able to open up and express what you really think and feel, and I don't mean what you think and feel when you are in a triggered, angry moment so that you are going to say things you regret later. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being able to speak your mind, being able to share with the person that you are dating or the person that you are in a long-term relationship with or the person you are married to, what it is that you really think and feel. And being able to really listen to understand someone and to expect that they will do the same, give you that same grace, so you can really understand and know the person that you are with. And especially in dating, when you are thinking about spending the rest of your life with that person. So I can't emphasize enough how important communication is in functional relationships. And the tendency in relationships that are maybe a little bit more dysfunctional or maybe a lot more dysfunctional, the tendency is to swing to one extreme or the other, to have a communication style where you basically take the stance that you're just going to keep things to yourself unless you absolutely have to. You're not going to share a lot openly with people. Kind of the stance of holding everything in is one extreme that people take, I think, sometimes in relationships that are not so functional. And the other extreme is to say absolutely everything that comes to your mind, no matter how mean or vicious or damaging it might be to the other person, no matter how painful it is to the other person, in the name of truth and honesty. Have you ever known anybody like that? Maybe you are a person like that, or maybe you're not a person like that and you've known someone like that. And if you have, if you've ever observed someone who really takes the philosophy of, I'm going to say whatever the heck I think in the name of honesty, no matter how much it affects other people in a negative way, then you may have noticed that a lot of people around that person are kind of walking around with their tail between their legs, walking on eggshells, being very careful around that person, afraid to step on their emotional toes, afraid to trigger a nasty, vicious attack from them. Not a good way to live, not a healthy way to live. Well, now, or in recent years, there's research that shows that being able to open up in a healthy way about how you feel is really vital to women's health, even more so than men. So one study found that women who did not speak their minds during fights or arguments with their mates were four times as likely to die during this 10-year study period as women who always told their husbands how they felt. Whether this was a reportedly happy or unhappy marriage didn't really affect the results. It was really all about communication. And what the study tells us is that there appears to be a very strong correlation for women in particular. And they didn't find the same correlation for men. But for women, that there was a strong correlation to being healthy and being able to tell their husbands or mates how they felt. So if that is really so important to women, and I'm inclined to believe that that study is representing something real, because in all of my years as a psychotherapist, my observation and experience, and of course I wasn't doing hard research, but my experience as a therapist for so many years was that women who bottled everything up and did not feel free to open their minds, to speak openly to their mates, were really unhappy on so many levels and unhealthy on so many levels. And on the other hand, the women that I counseled who seemed to feel a sense of personal freedom about being able to express themselves really seemed to function better in life and be overall much happier. So what this tells us about dating is that you need to date someone long enough to get past the enchantment stage. You know, the enchantment stage, that very earliest stage of a relationship when you're just so mesmerized by the person that you're dating. You're just falling so madly in love, and you just wear blinders, and you just think that they're just darn near perfect, and you can't see any flaws or foibles in the person. You know, I love the phrase enchantment stage, because the word enchantment basically means it's as if you have a spell that's been cast over you. And I think that very earliest stage of relationship is sort of like that for women and for men. That it's almost as if you're under a spell that blinds you to the human flaws and faults of the person in front of you. And it's actually quite, I guess it's one of those biological necessities, because if we immediately saw all of the flaws of the people that we dated, we'd probably never fall in love, we'd probably never really pair up with anyone. It would kind of be disastrous for relationships if we saw everyone's flaws right up front. I think we need that enchantment stage so that we can bond. So it's a good thing. You don't want to carry it on too long. You don't want to be in enchantment forever, because then I don't think you can help one another grow. But once you get past that stage, which is a healthy thing to do to eventually get past it and to actually experience some conflict, you know, arguments where you don't share the same exact point of view, that's actually very healthy when you're dating, because it allows you to discover what your style of communication is during the discussion of stressful topics. How do you handle that? And women in particular, I think, need to pay attention to some of these factors. You know, a question to ask yourself is, does he listen to me respectfully? Does he acknowledge my point of view? Even if he doesn't agree with me, does he still acknowledge it or seem to at least put forth some effort to listen and understand? Does he respond to me with warmth? You know, when the argument is over, do we bond again, or is there just, you know, a cold war going on afterwards? Is it hostile, or is it you know, we argued, now we apologize, make up, and return to our same level of warmth before? And does he give me time to air my thoughts and feelings? You know, does he laugh off my thoughts and feelings? Does he give me the time? Does he actually listen to me? Of course, this same checklist applies to how women listen to men. You know, you have to give what you expect to receive. In dating, you give what you expect to receive, and then you pay attention to what comes back. It's not a quid pro quo. It's not a scorecard that you keep every day. It is, over time, noticing the patterns. Overall, what's the pattern? And in dating, I think you get your best foot forward in the first few weeks. And if during that time you don't discover or you don't observe that he is willing to listen to you, that he's a good listener, don't expect him to miraculously transform into one later. That's your best foot forward. That's as good as it gets. It doesn't suddenly become miraculously better. All right, we're going to take a break. And after the break, we're going to talk about the three strategies that you will use or that you can use to win back the one who left. And now this commercial.
Hi, I'm Nina Atwood. Does this sound familiar to you? You start a new relationship full of hope that maybe this time he's the one. But weeks, months, or even years later, you realize that although the name and face have changed, the story is the same. He's all wrong for you, and now you have to continue suffering or start all over. Well, you don't have to keep repeating the same old patterns. If you want to raise your relationship game and put yourself on a whole new course for a happy, healthy, lasting love, get Temptations of the Single Girl, the 10 Dating Traps You Must Avoid. This is a self-help book like no other. It's a parable, an easy, fast story you can read in 2 to 3 hours. The fact that it's a story and not just dry, boring data means you'll retain the lessons learned far longer. And the more you retain, the greater the changes you'll be able to make in your life. That's why I wrote it this way, to make it easy for you to get what you need to permanently alter your love life for the better. You can get the book by clicking on the book cover right from the show page, or you can go to singlescoach.com, find the tab for books and tapes, then click on Singles Coach A Store. Temptations of the Single Girl is available through Amazon.com and as a Kindle book. And now back to more love strategies.
You're listening to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, your host. Tonight we're talking about what to do when he leaves and you want to win him back. So let's talk first about the typical reasons that men leave. Well, one is obviously fear. Fear of commitment, fear of having to do the work of a relationship, maybe fear of the perception that you are not compatible. So he might be worried about compatibility. He may be wrong about that, but he may just be worried about it. Maybe he's wounded. Maybe he's been hurt in the past and he's afraid of being hurt again. So he's kind of the wounded guy who's very leery of a new relationship, certainly after the relationship has advanced to the point that it's really involved and you're getting really close. Sometimes men who are very wounded from past relationships all of a sudden become very frightened of where this might go and whether or not they are in something, you know, that's safe, and so all of a sudden he may start backing up. So fear is a real common reason that men leave relationships, leave dating relationships. And if it's fear, then it is possible that he will go away and work that out and come back to you. So fear is not the worst reason for a guy to leave. I think reason number two is the one that if it is this reason, he's probably never coming back, and there's a good reason he shouldn't, and that is he really and truly cannot see himself marrying you. He's not that into you. He's not in love with you. He never really was. He's come to the conclusion that he was dating you for the wrong reasons, probably dating you because he enjoyed the companionship, thought you were a cool person, and doesn't mean that he thought badly of you, but he just didn't have that depth of feeling, that depth of really being into a woman that he was looking for and that you deserve to have. So reason number two, he's just not that into you. That's a reason that he might leave, and you eventually will be very glad that he left. That's not the guy that you really want to win back. Reason number three is that he's still in love with someone else. I don't know if you watch The Bachelor, but I do, and this current Bachelorette series, our Bachelorette beautiful young woman by the name of Allie narrowed the field down to three guys, and one of those people is a guy named Frank, who she was really getting very serious about. And at the 11th hour, Frank decided to go visit his ex-girlfriend and discovered that he still loved her and reconnected with her. And that was it. So he left to hook up with his ex. If a guy leaves you because he's still in love with someone else, that's not a guy that you want to come back. That's not a guy that's going to come back because he's pretty much gone. So we're kind of back to reason number one, fear, which is when a guy kind of backs up because he's progressed more quickly into a relationship than he thought he was going to, and he's having all kinds of feelings about you, and they're wonderful feelings, and he's falling in love with you, but he probably stopped and started to overthink it, and in overthinking it, he became fearful. So let's talk about what to do with a guy like that, a guy who's scared, but is still someone that might potentially come back. So there are, I think, three things you can do that will have an impact on whether or not this man comes back to you, and if he does, that the relationship could actually go forward in a healthy way. First of all, and this is your first and your number one strategy, and that is to accept his decision to leave with as much dignity as you can muster up. Okay, yes, you're going to be shocked. You're going to be grieving. You're going to be not knowing what to do at first. You'll probably have questions, and he probably won't have good answers. But he's done it. He's made this decision, and the very first thing that you can do that will really help you in the long run is to, as quickly as you can, accept his decision. And what that means is to resist the temptation to pursue him for a lot of answers. You know, initially, of course, you're going to say, why? Well, why are we breaking up? And he's going to give you some kind of lame answer. And the reason he is going to give you a lame answer is because he doesn't have a good answer. And the reason he doesn't have that is because the decision was made from the deepest part of the brain, what we call the limbic system, which is the part of the brain that is responsible for emotion. And the deepest part of that, what we call the old brain, which is where the fight or flight response occurs. So if he's scared, What he's basically doing is a flight response. He's running away from what he perceives to be the source of his fear. All right. I know this sounds like a lot of psychobabble, but hang in there with me. So his decision is coming from a deeply emotional part of his brain and a fight or flight response. Problem is, that part of the brain does not have access to language. It doesn't know how to explain why it does what it does. It just feels that way, and then the human being acts out of it. Then the thinking, rational part of the brain, what we call the cerebral cortex, then tries to explain the actions of the limbic system. I know this sounds really crazy and schizophrenic, but that's how our brains work. When we get scared and we react and run away from something, then we try to explain it with the logical brain. So if you ask him why he left, he will probably fish up some kind of a logical answer, but it really won't explain why he did what he did because he doesn't really know why he did what he did. That is going to take him time and a lot of reflection to come up with. So that's why I say early on, do your best to accept the decision and don't chase after him to try to find out the answers to the question, why did you leave? Early on, don't do that because you're not going to get a good answer. Later, weeks or even months later, you probably can get a good answer, but not at that time. So that's your number one strategy. Accept the decision without chasing after him for answers. The second thing that I want you to focus on is self-reflection. So after the biggest wave of emotions has passed, you know, the grief and the shock and the grief and the loss, followed probably by the anger, because that is usually what comes next. Maybe you're even going to pass through a stage called denial at some point. But when you get through the biggest wave of the emotions of the breakup, then I want you to focus on self-reflection. And this is a really critical stage because this is going to be the stage where you're going to be asking yourself some very tough questions. And you'll need a lot of time to reflect. If it helps you to do the self-reflection, I would suggest that you talk to a counselor or talk to a life coach or somebody who can be a sounding board and help you sort through this. Probably not your closest friends or family. They're not going to be very objective. But you need to ask yourself questions like this. One question is, do I really want him back? Why? Why do I really want him back? Why not? Potentially, why not? That's a big question to ask yourself. Because sometimes as time goes on, after a breakup, women sometimes realize down the road that there were real problems in that relationship, that his leaving, while it initially shocked you and hurt you and crushed you and put you through all this stuff, in the long run turns out to be a blessing because sometimes there are incompatibilities that are really not things you should try to fight through and try to fix. So that's what I want you to reflect about. What are the incompatibilities in this relationship, potentially? Maybe you can't come up with any big ones, but if there are, I mean, you'd be honest with yourself and look at them carefully and really ask yourself, are those things that I really want to try to live with? If he comes back, do I really want to live with those things? Do I really want to try to fight through those differences that we have? Because sometimes the differences between you are just too great. It's too much to overcome. And trying to overcome it really puts you in the position of trying to fix things that cannot be fixed. And that is a formula for depression and anxiety and all kinds of other life issues. So really be honest with yourself, really reflect, and look, what are the incompatibilities in this relationship? And then thirdly, to really ask yourself this question, could in the future, let's say that he comes back down the road, could I ever trust him not to leave in the future if he left me like this now? Could I really trust him to be there for me down the road? Could I trust him? If he came back and he made a commitment, would I believe him? Would it feel right? What would make me feel trusting again with this man? Now, that last part is something you may not be able to answer in advance, because the thing is that if he comes back down the road and he says, you know, boy, what an idiot I've been, and I can't believe I left you, and you're the best thing that ever happened to me, and now I want to marry you and spend the rest of my life with you, you're going to really have to be able to listen to your gut when that day comes. And your gut will tell you the truth. It will tell you if he is being honest and truthful to the best of his ability. It will tell you if he is just lonely and wanting you back because he feels lonely versus he is really and truly crazy about you, in love with you, can't imagine his life without you. You know, I think back on my own dating life quite a number of years ago before I met my husband. There was someone in my life that I dated for a long time and really loved and was very deeply connected to, and he was to me. And we ultimately broke up, and I moved on, and then he had deep regrets about that and spent some time trying to reconnect with me. But I had really worked hard on what I call the inner compass, which is the part of you that is giving you guidance about your life, guidance that goes beyond logic. And after having done so much work on my own inner compass and being much more dialed into it, I kept getting this very strong message from within myself that getting back together with this person was not really about us having a great relationship. It was really about him trying to overcome his feelings of abandonment and loss, and that it still felt like shifting sands. It still felt like quicksand, I guess is the even better way to say it. Quicksand, you know, getting sucked under. And ultimately, I made the decision not to go back, and I'm so thankful that I didn't, because what I didn't know was just ahead of me was meeting my wonderful husband, who is without a doubt the best thing that's ever happened to me, and without a doubt the best person who's ever been in my life. And I just can't imagine how I could have ever achieved the level of happiness and contentment with a mate that I have with my husband. So if you're listening, sweetheart, this is my way of sending you a little love message and saying thank you for being who you are in my life. So that is why I encourage you, listener, to really self-examine during this time period that this man who's left you has gone, to really develop your own inner compass and develop your ability to discern whether or not you would ever be able to trust him and believe him and believe that he's there for you. And that means asking yourself, do I really want him, or do I simply feel alone or abandoned or lonely or those kinds of things? That's what you have to figure out in your self-reflection. Strategy number two, self-reflection. You have to be able to make that discernment between trying to grasp and hold on to something out of loneliness, out of grief, out of a sense of abandonment versus rekindling a relationship on a much better ground of two people being in love and committed and devoted to one another and compatible, that he is the right person for you. That's what you have to figure out in your time of self-reflection. Can't emphasize enough how valuable that time is and how essential it is that you have that. All right, strategy number three, live your life well. I've known lots of women who had a guy break up with them, and later he came back and proposed, and they were married and have had good lives together. It can work out. It absolutely can work out. Doesn't have to, doesn't necessarily will, but it can. But the one thing that all these good outcome stories had in common was this: the woman moved on with her life, lived it well, was as happy as she could be, but at the same time not completely closed, did not shut down her heart where he was concerned. So she was open to a reunion, but she was not pining away, depressed, anxious, you know, eating Ben and Jerry's and gaining 50 pounds and that sort of thing. She was living her life well. All those stories had that in common. So that has to be a really critical piece of your strategy for winning him back. Here are some things you don't want to do because it will absolutely destroy the possibility of getting back together with him and having a good relationship. Don't grandstand. Don't set up scenarios to make him jealous. Don't jump into bed with the next living, breathing male person to make sure he finds out. Don't key his car. Don't egg his house. Don't trash talk him on Facebook. In other words, don't do anything that makes you look like a crazy witch, because that is a guarantee that he will then give out a big sigh of relief and think, wow, I'm so glad I got away from her in time. Don't do anything to diminish your pride and your self-esteem as a woman. It won't win you any points at all. Instead, be the wonderful person that you are, so that if he still cares, if he's the guy who's just scared but deep down loves you, he will see you that way. He'll see you as the terrific woman who got away. And that may make him second guess his decision. If he looks over there and sees you living your life and you look great and you look happy and content, he's going to go, maybe she's the prize, and I let her slip through my fingers. And you will very soon find him on your doorstep. But he will only see you that way if you keep your head high and resist the temptation to chase after him or denigrate him in any way. And the other positive benefit of strategy number 3 is if you move on and live your life well and he never comes back, then you are positioned to move forward powerfully. You'll be in a great place to attract someone wonderful and new. Because remember that the one thing that is the most irresistible and attractive to all men is a woman who esteems herself, takes care of herself, and lives her life well, is happy, who is a contribution to the people around her, is positive. That's irresistible. Live for everything you value in your life on top of a relationship with a man. That is always the most powerful strategy that you can have. Okay, so those are your strategies for how to win him back. Number 1, accepting his decision and not chasing after him for answers. Number 2, self-reflection, so that you can make a real discernment about whether this is going to be a real relationship down the road for you versus something you're just holding on to. And number 3, live your life well. All right, we're going to take another short break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes to talk about a couple of more things. We've got a couple of people who have written in with questions, and I want to address those before we wrap up for the evening. Stick around. We'll be back in just a moment or two with more love strategies.
Hi, I'm Nina Atwood. Does this sound familiar to you? You start a new relationship full of hope that maybe this time he's the one. But weeks, months, or even years later, you realize that although the name and face have changed, the story is the same. He's all wrong for you, and now you have to continue suffering or start all over. Well, you don't have to keep repeating the same old patterns. If you want to raise your relationship game and put yourself on a whole new course for a happy, healthy, lasting love, get Temptations of the Single Girl, the 10 Dating Traps You Must Avoid. This is a self-help book like no other. It's a parable, an easy, fast story you can read in 2 to 3 hours. The fact that it's a story and not just dry, boring data means you'll retain the lessons learned far longer. And the more you retain, the greater the changes you'll be able to make in your life. That's why I wrote it this way, to make it easy for you to get what you need to permanently alter your love life for the better. You can get the book by clicking on the book cover right from the show page, or you can go to singlescoach.com, find the tab for books and tapes, then click on Singles Coach A Store. Temptations of the Single Girl is available through Amazon.com and as a Kindle book. And now back to more love strategies.
All right, we're back. More love strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, your host. And we're talking about the strategies that you can use to win back the one who got away. But I want to give you another extreme. So this is a story about someone whose man left and who had a reaction that I would consider not to be a very normal reaction to it. And I'll share the story with you. So these are not their real names. But basically, Sandy fell, not her real name, fell deeply in love with Greg, not his real name, over the course of their romance. By the fourth date, she was sure he was the one for her. He seemed to return her feelings, and their relationship progressed nicely until about the fourth week. Then all of a sudden, he stopped calling as much, and he started making excuses like working too much and needing time with his friends. And the more he pulled away, the more obsessed she became with trying to get him back. He began avoiding her calls and not returning her emails and text messages, and this sent her into an emotional tailspin. The story took a dramatic turn when she showed up at his work and demanded that he talk to her. Embarrassed that this emotionally overwrought woman had shown up at his office, Greg asked her to leave. The situation escalated until the police were called, at which point she hastily left, deeply ashamed of her behavior. After that, Sandy suffered off and on for the next 3 years, yearning for the return of her lover, yes, the guy who had spurned her. And though she desperately wanted to get over him, she found that she could not rid herself of constant intrusive thoughts of Greg. She idealized him in her mind and admonished herself for ruining their relationship. Sandy was suffering from the downside of limerence. What the heck is limerence? Well, limerence is a word. It's spelled L-I-M as in Mary, E-R-A-N-C-E. It's a word that was coined by the author Dorothy Tenev in her book, Love and Limerence, The Experience of Being in Love, which was published back in the late 70s. Well, in a nutshell, limerence is the same as falling madly in love, except it happens when love is not returned equally, and the person who is not loved equally becomes very obsessive. All right. So there isn't a whole lot of difference between limerence and the normal feeling of falling in love, except at some point the limerent person crosses the line into obsession. We call the limerent person the LP, and the LP then suffers over this obsession because they cannot turn off the intrusive thought patterns about their short-term lover. Often these LPs will hide the problem, even from therapists, you know, fearing that they'll be viewed as crazy. And it's a lot like an addiction in that it is very tough to recover from it. You can't just tell them to get over it. It's involuntary, meaning that these obsessive thoughts happen no matter how much the LP wishes for them to stop. And the first thing you have to do is recognize it. If you are suffering from that or you know someone who is, you have to get therapy. You have to get professional help. You cannot do it by yourself. You have to be able to work through to a point of healing. You have to be able to share your story. So if you have ever experienced this, or if you are currently experiencing the inability to stop having intrusive thoughts, constant obsessive thinking about someone who left you a long time ago, someone that you were in a short relationship with, that person did not return your feelings, you may be a limerent person, and you really will need to get some professional help for that. If you know someone like that, someone who's short-term boyfriend left, and it's been 3 years, and they're still talking about him, still obsessing over him, then you might want to encourage that person to get some professional help, because they will not be able to do it otherwise. All right, I've got a question coming in from a listener. Nicole is writing in with this question. She says, "Dear Nina, I've been dating my boyfriend for nearly 4 months. We love each other very much and have talked about getting engaged next year and getting married in a couple of years. The one thing that is bothering me is that he is overweight and he had gastric bypass surgery nearly 3 years ago. I hadn't seen his weight until last week when my therapist brought up her concerns over the fact that he is overweight. She thinks that if I continue dating him, I'll end up being unhappy in the long run. He and I have a very open communication style and talk about everything. I told him that if he gained 50 pounds, for example, that would be the start of the end for us. I know it's horrible to say, and I can't believe I actually think this way, but it's true. I want to marry a guy who will be able to do things with our kids. My therapist's thoughts have really sat with me and bothered me. I love this guy, and I can see a wonderful future with him. How do I put what my therapist has said behind me and focus on how I feel about the guy in my life? How do you weigh what others say without feeling the need to take what they say as truth?" Well, Nicole, you know, it takes time to determine how you really feel about someone. You're not going to really know in 4 months' time if someone is the right person to spend the rest of your life with. But as you continue to date him and get to know him, if you discover that you really love him, then the future has to take care of itself. You know, lots of people have gastric bypass these days and go right on to live great lives with their mates. And yes, you're right to be concerned about massive weight gain and what that would do to your relationship and your life together, but the same thing could happen with somebody else. The truth is, life happens and people's health changes, and what is more important that you want to look for about health is compatibility. So what I would have you look at is he committed to his health? You know, does he do the best that he can to eat in a very healthy way? Does he exercise regularly? Do you? And so if the two of you share a commitment to a healthy lifestyle, eating healthy and exercising, then you know, one or the other of you over, believe me, over the many decades that you can share with someone, your body can change a lot, and you may have times in the future when you have a greater tendency to gain weight, but then you make adjustments if you're committed to being healthy. You exercise more, you eat more healthy. So I think that is what you want to look at, is your basic compatibility with regard to health. And secondly, with, you know, your question, how do you weigh what others have to say? I think that what you do is you simply listen, and then you spend time in self-reflection, and you ask yourself, is that true for me? Without being defensive about it, you just ask yourself, is that true for me? Because sometimes the people around you, whether it's a therapist or whether it is a good friend or a family member, sometimes the people around you can see things about your relationship that are in your blind spot, something that you may not be looking at, and that you need to look at before you make a decision about marrying someone. So I would say listen open with an open mind, and then thank the person for giving you that feedback. You know, thank you for telling me that. I need to reflect for myself and see if that is really true for me. And if you discover that it is true for you, then of course you're going to act on it. If you discover it is not true for you, then I think you simply let your therapist know that, you know, I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, really weighed what you had to say to me, and I've come to the conclusion that that is not a great concern for me, and here's why. You know, I see that we're compatible. I see that we love each other, and I'm going to give this a long time to develop and make sure that my feelings are real and his feelings are real, and that we're not just in the middle of the enchantment stage of the relationship. And I certainly will be looking at that very carefully as time goes on. So, well, we have a lot of takeaways, I hope, for you from our show tonight. And one is to be very careful with those geolocative apps that tell people where you are. Use them very carefully or not at all. And the other thing that we talked about tonight about speaking your mind, your health really depends on it. So do be in a relationship with the ability to share what's on your mind. When you date someone who is willing to listen and you're willing to listen to them. Those kinds of communication issues can have a huge impact on your happiness, your well-being, and so on in your life, especially your physical health if you're a woman. And then, of course, remember that the very best strategy you can have for being left behind in a relationship and potentially getting back together is to live your life well. And, of course, that's a great strategy anytime, isn't it? So, well, I want to thank you for joining us tonight and give a big thanks to Kate, my producer, who screens calls and emails for the show. And then I want to give a very special acknowledgement to my loving and devoted husband, Mark. Thank you, sweetheart, for being the wind beneath my wings. Be sure and join us again next week for more love strategies. And in the meanwhile, send me your questions about love, life, dating, and relationships. Send them to Nina, N-I-N-A, at singlescoach.com. And then, of course, remember that there's only one way to great relationships, and that is to live a joyful life of integrity, spirit, and purpose.
Thank you for joining us at Love Strategies. Be sure and visit the premier website for single men and women who want to date smart, singlescoach.com. Sign up for the newsletter and you'll get notifications for this show as well as other free dating tips. If you want a coach to support you in your growth and recovery, go to Singles Coaching on the website and choose personal coaching. That's it for today, and be sure and tune back in for more love strategies so you can date smart and find the love of your life.